older. Somebody went to Harley Davidson, paid $44 for it. So I better use it. Yeah. Good evening, everyone. My name is Chuck Shulton. I'm an alcoholic. It is indeed a pleasure to be here. I have a lot of friends here, people I love that are dear to me, that helped us get the Monday night speakers group started and still support it when they can. And that's my home group, and I love them dearly. I sobered up on February 23rd of 1969. Woo! And from that day until this day, I haven't had to take any kind of drug or sedating pill. I don't know what they did to me in the hospital, but you guys were watching. You were all there. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you can tell that. I have an enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous next to none. Amy, thank you for coming up and sharing with us today. I really appreciate it, because that's what we're all about, sharing our life with someone else so that they don't have to die the way many of us and my friends have. I just lost a baby, a guy that I sponsored yesterday. And it hurts. I don't care who you are, if you're sponsoring, if you're trying to help others, what happens to you is when they go out, they take a little piece of you with them. And he took a little piece of my heart with him. And he died in a motel room all alone. And my God, I never want to do that. Before I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I beg to do that. Today, that's not something I'd like to do. I love to see Amy. What did Amy say? 29 days? I misunderstood that. 4 months, I thought. Okay. But 4 months, I couldn't even walk yet. Yeah. And I'd love to tell you that things were wonderful when I was 4. Yeah. I'm still watching you guys trying to figure out how in the hell I'm going to get a car, you know, because I put mine in a swimming pool. And it needed a wash. Let me tell you that story. I was I'm drinking. Better yet, I was having some drinks. That's what I used to tell my wife that. And she just, it'd run her crazy. Where you been? Having some drinks. We had bought a new home, and the home was on kind of an incline, and then there was a flat spot, and then you could go into the garage. And I thought that was a neat way to build a house. And somewhere while I was having some drinks, someone told me about the new clicker that Sears and Roebuck had, that they installed it on your garage door. It had a light on it. It had a track on it. And if you come around the corner and hit that clicker, the garage door would open, and you'd never have to stop. You could just come on up there and slide on in. About 4 o'clock in the morning, I went down to Sears and I got one of these things and I had it installed. And the next day I come in about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I had to come around the corner and into the house. And I come around that corner and I hit that clicker, and I saw the light come on and the garage door come up, and I hit that incline and hit that flat spot and slid on in and slid right out through the back garage, out through the wall. And I'm sitting in the backyard wondering what in the hell happened. Oh, sure, the kids had left some of that play sand so that I skidded. And so we got that fixed, the insurance company fixed it. And a few days later, I'm down at the bar having some drinks. And I come home, as they turn the lights on, so it's time to come home. And I come around that corner and I hit that clicker, and the garage door started up and the light come on, and I thought, she had bought a washer dryer and put it up against that far wall to make sure I wouldn't drive through it. And I hit that incline, hit that flat spot, applied the brakes, I thought. Slid on in, and I took washer, dryer, wall and all right out the back door. So, I'm telling this story down in Long Beach one time, a long time ago. My daughter, my oldest daughter, is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was with me. And I finished telling the story, and after we were headed home, and she said, "Dan," she said, "you lied to those people." And I said, "What do you mean I lied?" She said, "That's not the way it happened at all." She says, "I got up about 4 o'clock in the morning. We had a Mexican housekeeper that was deathly afraid of earthquakes. 4 o'clock in the morning, and you knock the rear wall out of a two-story house, it feels like an earthquake." And she would get up, turn all the lights on in the house, collect all the children. I had three. Collect the children and get them out and stand on the front lawn and say, "Mucho borracho." Just horrid. And so anyhow, I said, "How in the world, well, where'd I go wrong in telling the story?" And she says, "Well," she said, "I got about 4 o'clock in the morning," and she said, "the next door neighbor's lights were on. So I looked over there, and you and he were sitting at a table, a little pool table, or a table next to the pool, having wine coolers. And your car was in his swimming pool." Apparently what had happened, I had went up the ramp, hit the flat spot, turned left, went out through the sidewall, and into the swimming pool. Other than that, my life was perfect. That's the kind of drunk I was. So if you want to know what kind of drunk I was, that's it. I started drinking at 13, I quit at 34, and I've been sober ever since. And I'm eternally grateful to you guys, especially the young people's groups, and Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. Let me tell you a little bit about me. I was born and raised Southern Baptist in Savannah, Georgia, just across the road over here. Yeah, and if you go into Atlanta, you usually go by that way. And I went to school there. I was born and raised there. I'm an orphan. I was taken out of an orphanage by a lovely lady when I was 2 years old. She went into an orphanage looking for a child, and there I was. I was gorgeous. I had blonde, curly hair and a big smile and blue eyes. I mean, you'd have taken me. Yeah. And she picked me and she took me home. And my father was one of these guys. He was a working man. Big old forearms. He was a woodworker, had been all his life. Mild-mannered. My mother was not quite as mild-mannered. He sent me out in the bushes to get a switch to beat myself with. I ain't doing that, you know. And they raised me as best they could. I've heard many people say things, bad things about their parents. I come to realize that the longer I stay sober, the more I realize they did the very best they knew how to do. There wasn't very much teaching in those days. If you'll think about it, in 1939, long before most of us were born, not me, but you, even Roger. In 1939, they closed the patent office. The U.S. patent office was closed. They were going to eliminate it. And the reason they were going to eliminate the U.S. patent office is that everything that had needed to be invented was already invented in 1939. Our big book come out in 1939. They did not want to have people sitting around at the patent office doing nothing. Can you imagine that? No computers, no typewriters, none of the stuff that you know today, no cell phones. How about that? I mean, that's sacrilegious, isn't that? No cell phone, none of that stuff. Nothing, none of the cars that we know today. From 1939 to today, none of it. And as we look back across it, my life, she's leaving, she said, I've had enough of that crap. Don't forget to wash your hands. That's a big thing of mine. Wash your damn hands. When you get spiritual, wash your damn hands. It's the way to get started on the spiritual path. Just wash your damn hands. Never thought about it, did you? Put the damn cart back at the grocery store. Yeah. Think about it. Think about it. This is stuff we don't do that kills us, not stuff we do. Yeah. Anyhow, where the hell did that come from? I think Bill sent me a good card up. My father was a working man, just a great guy. Mother was a little lady, an Irish lady, all You think your hair is red? You ought to see my pants. I had sisters that looked like that. Right out of the chute. That's why I love to come here. We can laugh together. And I went to school in Savannah, and for most of the time, and I excelled in basketball. I'm 6'2", and in those days, in the 50s and late 40s, that's very tall. If you've ever been to some of the older homes, you have to reach down to get the doorknob. Think about it. You usually don't think about it, but it's true. People were much shorter than they are today. I don't want to give any examples as I sit here. And anyhow, things were wonderful in that whole... I was born and raised in an ethnic neighborhood. I mean, I had Jewish and Greek and us Irish people and us German people, and I mean, we were all kind of just mixed in together. Italians. I'd pick on you. My Italians. And in that, they're mafia, they're just Italian. I swear to God. Anyhow, we had a great time. We had a wonderful time. If you didn't like what was cooked at your home, you went to somebody else's. And during that period of time, I ended up with a scholarship to the University of Florida to play basketball. And my dad was very proud. He went around and told everybody. And what happened was that I went to Gainesville to play. I went to play basketball. I puked all over their basketball court, and I took up the varnish right off the... And I lasted, we're not sure, we've been checking it, somewhere between 2 and 4 days. And I called my father, and I caught a truck out of there and hitchhiked out and called my father and on the phone, and he says, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania." Now, if you've never been to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, don't bother. Even people that have been to Punxsutawney tell you, don't bother. Yeah. And I stayed at a hotel, and that is an important part of my story. I stayed, what time do I have to finish? Quarter till.
20 till.
I'm only going to quarter
till.
Okay. I traveled all over the bridge, you know. Anyway, I ended up in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and I didn't know until I was over here at Sandy's meeting one time, and I was telling somebody about Punxsutawney, and they said, "Did you see Punxsutawney Phil?" And I said, "No, I didn't." I didn't even know him. And come to find out, that's where they see the groundhog at, is Punxsutawney. I had no idea. I stayed at the Grand Hotel on the 5th floor. That was as high as it went. The bar was in the basement, and I drank a thing called Rolling Rock. If you've ever drank Rolling Rock, it's about I haven't gotten over it yet, I don't think. It's about that high. There are little things they call beer. And little cans. And you go down to the basement and you get a handful and you try to get on the elevator and back to the fifth floor before you drink it all. Yeah. That never worked for me. And so consequently, I damn near wore myself out and the elevator out trying to go up and down. I ran out of money. Long story short. And I called Mommy. What did we do? What did drunks do when we're all out of options? We call Mommy. Yeah. Mommy, I'm broke. Same call. Mommy, I'm broke. And she says, where are you? And I said, I'll tell you when I get home. Remember that story? I'll talk to you when I get home. I mean, we all been there, and I know that. And she said, no, where are you? And I told her where I was at, and she said, let me let you talk to your father. All I'm asking for is a lousy $20 bill, so I can get out of Punxsutawney. In those days, you can go a long ways on a $20 bill. And so I called her and I asked her, or she put my dad on, and he said, where are you? And I told him where I was at. And he said, what are you doing there? And I said, I'll talk to you when I get home. And he said, I'm giving you back to your mother, and you're giving back to my mother. My mother sent me $20. Western Union. I don't know, are they still in business? I'm surprised, but no, I don't. Especially the back row back there. The slippers and loafers are going, yeah. Mommy sent me a $20 bill, and I hitchhiked. Well, I had a choice: catch a bus and drink not, or hitchhike and drink. Now, what do you think I did? So, as I was hitchhiking through Philadelphia, I damn near died. I was stuck in there, some park. Anyhow, got out of Philadelphia, come on up, on the way to Georgia, and got to Savannah, and I got back with you guys, my people. They were preparing a punch bowl for me. They had a big punch bowl, and they had put grape juice in it. And on top of that, they put white lightning on that. And then they stirred up the ring and they put two ice cubes in it. Now, don't want to ruin things. And it was my first spiritual experience. They called it Purple Jesus. And every time you take a drink, you go, Jesus! Damnedest stuff you ever tasted in. We drank every bit of it. And a bunch of us guys decided to join the Coast Guard. Because Coast Guard's right there in Savannah. And it's up there. And I can always ring it out, you know. Joined the Coast Guard. So, next morning we went down and joined the Coast Guard. We got in the wrong line, ended up in the United States Navy. We were in the Navy, all of us. Not just one. I mean, we're dumb. lemons. Is that it? That's what Loretta calls us. Lemmings. That's when you all do the same damn thing. Stupid. Anyhow, we go into the United States Navy and we think, oh wow, it's not really a big deal. We'll go down to Great Lakes, we'll splash around for a little while and come on back home. Well, they put us on train centers, United States Navy recruitment down in San Diego, California. Now, we're Georgia boys. I'm a Georgia boy. I don't know a damn, that's worse than being Kentucky. That's right about it. It's the same. And they send us to San Diego, California, and I'll tell you what I thought, and I won't get off of this. I was on the way to San Diego on a train. And every time the train would slow down or for water or whatever the hell they slowed down for, we had a designated runner. And he would jump off the train, run across the tracks, grab a half pint or a pint, and run back and jump back on the train. Now that's what a designated runner does. So if you ever get caught, you know. We got down to San Diego, and I'll tell you what I thought. I'm a Georgia boy. I've never been. I've been to Pennsylvania. I'm hot. Yeah. And Ponce Tony on top of that. Yeah. So anyhow, we go down to San Diego, and on the way I'm thinking, I've been to the movies. I've seen how these people live in Hollywood. I know the streets are paved in gold. I know there's big boob blondes all over the place. There's a sprinkling of redheads. One, two. And things are going to be wonderful once we get to San Diego. Now, our book talks about, I want to get back there in a minute. When I got off that train, when the train come to San Diego, we got off that train. And what do you think is there? Not a big boob blonde. No golden roads or streets. There's a drill instructor. And he's got a bad attitude. Yeah. And he makes us march around and do all the things we do. I spent 3 years, 9 months, and 27 days in the United States Navy, most of it in Korea. And I loved it so much that the minute I had a chance to get out, I ran. I got out of there as fast as I could. While I was in the Navy, I met a girl. Don't we all? There's got to be a girl or a guy involved in every story to make it juicy. I met her. We sang the same song. She was working for the Bank of America as a teller. She had a job and a car. What else do you need? Yeah. That is a good girl. Yeah. Long legs. We got Roger salivating up here.
Oh.
We had three beautiful blonde, blue-eyed girls on that marriage. She was partly Italian. I annihilated her. Her mother, that was the only daughter in the family, sat and watched me while I just killed her spirit. I'm not proud of it, but that's what I did. We had three beautiful daughters, blonde hair, blue eyes. I would make promises, and I took her down that broad highway of broken promises and busted dreams. Because if you marry a guy like me, that's all the hell you're going to get. One more promise. Honey, I never drink again. This is the end of it. One day in January of 1968, I promised her I wasn't going to drink anymore. You know how those promises go. Each and every one of us have had our own. And I went to the store, went to the shop. I had been in business for years by this time. And I left there, and I had a group of workers, and I went into the store, and it was the day before Thanksgiving, and I went into my office, and I pulled out my checkbook, and I pulled their checks out, and as I had walked in, they had a little bar set up outside. And I pulled those checks out, and I closed that door, and I locked it, handed it to them, and told them I hope they had a happy Thanksgiving. And one of them said to me, "Hey, Chuck, have a vodka nice juice. Won't hurt you. One won't hurt you." And I said, "No, thank you. I promised her I would not drink." And I left there, and I walked out to the front of the building, and I forgot to bring my checkbook with me, and I needed it. And I walked back in, opened the door, and took the checkbook out, closed the door, locked it, and as I turned, they said, one of the guys said, "Chuck, come on, have one drink with us." I had that one drink the day before Thanksgiving in 1968. I come to on February the 23rd, I come to January the 1st of 1969. I don't know all the places I've been. I do know that I was in Bakersfield, California. Nobody has a total blackout that you don't remember anything, as far as I know. I had another awakening somewhere in San Francisco. I was at some hotel with a bunch of guys and gals. I had another awakening somewhere in Arizona, where the carpets were white and the walls were white also. They had had a party, and the girls from Las Vegas were still there. And that's the last thing I remember until I got into Southern California. And I picked up the phone, and I called her, and I said, "Would you please come get me?" And she said, "Where's your car?" And I said, "I don't know." And she came that morning. That was January the 1st of 1969, and she drove up, and I went out, and I got in the car, and I said the thing I've always said, "Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I've been gone the entire holidays part, the holiday season." And she said, "Sorry won't get it." She said, "I want you out of the house in the morning. I've already called the attorney, and he's drawing up the papers. I want you out of here. I don't want to live this way anymore, and I don't want to raise my children this way." anymore. And I walked out on January the 1st of 1969 with no income, sick as hell, no way to, no place to go. And I ended up on the boulevard where I'd done a lot of drinking, and I don't want to talk about that. I ended up down there. If you haven't been there and you continue to drink, you will get to the place I'm talking about. Way down on the far end of the bar, all by yourself, in that lonely, dark little recess that every bar has. And I sat down there and I thought, and I drank. And there ain't nothing worse than drinking and thinking. Yeah, except thinking and thinking. And one of the guys, and real quickly, one of the guys said, "Hey, we've got a little tent city kind of thing set up in cardboard boxes out behind the A&P grocery store. Why don't you come join us and pull a box out there?" I went out and I pulled the cardboard box out behind the A&P store, and the Big Shot laid down and went to sleep. Started to mist in Southern California in that part of the year, and one of the girls that worked the boulevard on the corner said to me, "Chuck, why don't you come stay with us? We're working out of a motel in Garden Grove. And we got a little room that's got towels and toilet paper and stuff in it. And it's got a little cot, fold-out cot, steel fold-out cot. Come stay there. At least you'll stay warm and out of the weather." And I went there to stay for just a short while. And I made a run with a buddy of mine from that I was born and raised with. And we ran down to Mexico to do a little deal. And we come back. And he wanted to go again, and I said, "I can't go. I'm tired. I gotta rest. Gotta get some sleep." And we hadn't slept all that period of time. He said, "I'm going to make one more run and I'm going to give it up." And he made one more run and he went down for 35 years. And I made a left turn and I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Seconds and inches. When the student is ready, God will provide the teacher. I don't care who you are, where you are, what you're doing. It's none of his business, and I hope like hell it's none of yours. And what happened to me, I hope will happen to you. I had a sponsor that was smart enough to send me to the young people's group, and I hung in the young people's group. And we love one another. And we went everywhere together, and there was 125 of us. Out of that 125, 121 are still alive and over 30 years sober. That's strong. That's unity. That's part of that triangle that you can't get away from. Because that's where it all begins. It begins in unity. If I don't stay with you, I will die. And I know that. I've been here 41 years and some change. I'm grateful not for the 41 years. I'm grateful for the time I've been able to spend with you guys and gals. I thank you for inviting me. Thank you.